This year is brought to you by Eshel Publications. Eshel Publications is a non-profit organization dedicated to spreading the Torah, Shiurim, and Sefarim of Rabbi Aaron Lapiansky. For sponsorships or more information, visit eshelpublications.com.
We did discuss before the Rashida came, you know, what issues we're grappling with, you know.
And what issue, let me see what issues he's not grappling with. Then we'll try it.
You know, and some things came out. You know, anybody, what issues they grappling with? Go ahead.
A lot of people talk about Shovavim.
Yeah.
So what's the source for Shovavim and Shmir Zabris and...
We also brought up that Shmiras HaBris seems to have two approaches. It's out there, a very aggressive approach with a lot of incentives to stay away. But then there's the approach, it seems to be, of like, Chatas Neurim, leave it alone, you know, it's the focus on Limud Torah that the Rambam says. So maybe what is Shovavim and what is the approach that we could take to approach helpfully for that?
So, let's, okay, the Isser of Hirhurim is a Doraisdik Isser. The level of Chumrah that's attributed to it, we know from Sifri Kabbalah. There's here and there in Gemara, but mostly from Sifri Kabbalah. The Baal HaTanya explains, Baal HaTanya deals with what seems to be a conflict in the way Sifri Kabbalah describe it, and with tremendous Chumrah, and the way in which in Halacha it has less. And he explains that because it's something that's given to do tshuva totally, that's why its place is more in Kabbalah. So it's chomer before a person does tshuva. It's possible to do totally with tshuva and all this. You have to take care of it. That's more or less the way Baal HaTanya explains it. There's more to it, but I want to try to stick to being as sim as possible. So definitely, it's an important inyan. A lot of its significance is brought out more in the Sifri Kabbalah than in the Sifri Halacha. And therefore, maybe parallel to that, the way in which it's dealt with is very, very different in the more Hasidic world, or much of the Hasidic world, and the yeshiva world, the Litvish yeshiva world. Everyone believes that Kedusha and Taira is extraordinarily important. The question is, shall we grapple this head on because we want Kedusha to be the point of that everything revolves around? Do we tell a person what use is your learning if you're tummy and thinking of who knows what? Or do we go the other way around? And do we say, stick to learning, get into that, and the Kedusha will drive out any tumor? It's the way the Rambam says it. The approach, the Masoros that we have from our Bayim, starting from the Goyen onwards, is the second approach. The more a person gets a fire and a passion in learning, the best way to replace any other passion is to have a passion for learning, for mitzvahs, for avodah, and so on and so forth. It means that you may have a few more times that you stumble, but in the end, you will have a very powerful, positive sense as opposed to just struggling. I once read something very fascinating. If a typist types at a speed that is slow enough not to make mistakes versus typing at a speed that's very quick but correcting the mistakes later. Now, this was before there was something called autocorrect and whatever else they have. When you actually had to look over and see, you actually can go a lot more, it's a lot more efficient and a lot quicker to type quickly and correct mistakes than to type slowly at a pace they won't make mistakes. It's a fascinating, phenomenon. I guess it's very similar in this way to in our Masoros of what's the best way to approach it. Let us go very strong in a very positive way, push ourselves to get to enjoy learning, to thrill in learning, to really, really have passion.
How do you do that?
What?
How do you do that?
Yeah, straight up.
What? So, okay, good point, good question. A, persevere. Get to, when you're learning, there should be a lot of give and take. What did you say? Why did you say? Does it make sense to me? If the learning is animated, spoken, animated, and discussed, argued, you tend to get it. Rabbi Sol Salanta says, sometimes we have to mix a bit of the poison of wanting to be right. Rabbi Sol Salanta said, Alpi Musa, a person should always want to look for the truth. But it's important for a tachlis to try to mix in. You do want to be right. You do want to win an argument with another person. People like to win arguments. People like to be more right than the other person. When you introduce that, that's why in yeshivas there was, again, there's always a measure. Like, he said a good kasha. He's the one who understands. It creates a little bit of an uncomfortable feeling. And that level of shalom lishma is helpful. At the end of the day, hopefully people just get excited. Listen, there's a very steep uphill climb. Till you get enough knowledge and skill to be there. I have a good exercise here. Walk into yeshiva like the Mir Yeshiva and take a look at people sitting and learning. They all, many of them, the most of them, look very, very into it. Why? Manishtana. What? But and they're also further ahead. They're also further ahead in the learning. So when you're translating the words, when you're trying to figure out the sentences, when you're trying to, you know, to get the basics, it's rough. It's very hard to argue what a word means. It's not really where you're going to express it. But as time goes on, and once you get to a point where you can actually think about something, say something about the topic itself, it begins to become exciting. So you look for that, you gather enough information and skill, and when you get there, that creates that excitement. And time and again, that's, you know, when I was learning Mir Yeshiva, it's hard to say that everybody that came into Mir Yeshiva was a sparkling lamdin into it. That wasn't the description of a typical boy who came in. Some yes, some very not, some in the middle. My marshal was like, you ever see, like you have a large bathtub and a hole, and the water that's very close to the hole goes very quickly. The water around goes slowly, slowly, slowly. But as it begins to swirl quicker and quicker and quicker, it gets absorbed in. The further along you go, the more it energizes. You begin to understand. You begin to be able to say something that you can be proud of. You begin to be able to argue and so on. Yes?
So to get like further along, right, like how should you learn Gemara if you know you're beginning out right now? Like, should we learn Bekiut, you know, go through most of the things, or should we just go Be'iyun?
So both are important, but let me tell you what I think in either case is a very important exercise. And I would say to make the Gemara three-dimensional, which means like this. When you're reading words on a piece of paper, it's somewhere between one to two-dimensional. If you visualize it, let's give an example. Let's say you have chavruta, I don't know where you're holding in terms of, let's say you're doing Tosfos. When you finish, if you could sort of have the same argument, let's review the Tosfos by doing the argument. The Gemara says this and this. I don't understand how you could say this and this. Doesn't it say something else differently? And you answer, well, don't you see the difference in these two cases? That case is like this, and this case is like that. And I'll ask you, do you have any proof of that? You just send it off the top of your head and say, yes, there's another Gemara like this. If you're able to put conversation into it, my fantasy was teaching elementary Gemara to kids to have them act out the Gemara in terms of an argument. These are two, there's a back and forth. And when you're visualizing, and you're trying to sort of, you feel each one saying, so Tosfos is a back and forth. It's not a statement. So Tosfos's question should be, I don't understand, what is the Gemara saying? And then there's a reply to it. Where, what are you comparing? They're very different, these two cases. And then Tosis brings a riot from place, you know, which means Tosis felt the need to prove it. It's a nice idea, but where do you see anything like it? Tosis is proving it. If you could, so if you do it yourself, mostly, but if you do it even with a chavruta, do that way, same with the Gemara. If you try to say back and forth in Gemara in your own words, it creates, you get a sense of a thing rather than just words being translated.
So both in Eon and Bikius, once we do
I think that. both of them could work. It's something that could work because it is like that. You know, the shackle of a tire, the back and forth, are two people, even if it's the same person, it's two people, each one living, you know, I know, saying something.
Thank you.
Yeah, yes.
Where would you put video games on a sort of like bringing you down in each year? Or just a life in general?
So I think anything that engages a person needs to ask himself, what am I doing? Why am I doing? Let's give an example. Is there anything halachically wrong with spending your life on the beach, private beach, not a public beach, sitting with your feet in the air and twiddling your thumbs? The answer is, there's nothing specifically halachically wrong, except why are you killing yourself? Where's your life going to? What's the purpose of your life? Something a lot more fundamental than individual halacha. On the other hand, if you work hard, your blood pressure is up, and you go to the beach and you lay there for an hour, that's very good. It sort of calms you down, eases you, relaxes you, and you're able to do what you're supposed to do. Person asking himself, what am I devoting my life to? For instance, if you are a very hard-driven businessman, and your life is making money, that's who you are, what you are, then what's wrong with video games is, because there's no money made out of it. You know, what's the point of it? A person has to ask himself, what's the point of my life? And now, video games, and unfortunately everything in on computers, is made by very smart people whose goal in life is that you just sit there forever playing it. That's there was somebody in yeshiva by us in Silver Spring, very bright boy, very nice boy, you know, well-intended kid, never showed interest in learning. And I couldn't figure it out. You know, somebody's not capable, so I understand. Somebody's not serious about it. All the boxes checked, and there was something numb. And when I would sometimes sit and learn with him, he responded well. You know, he didn't have. And then he came back one summer and asked him, so-and-so, what'd you do all summer? He says, Rebbe, I vegged out. So I said, what does that mean? He said, I sat with a video game. You know, kosher, very kosher. Just, you know, putting boxes in the squares and squares in the boxes, whichever one, makes very little difference. So a person needs to ask himself, anything which numbs your mind and gives nothing in return, that's in a strong way the ultimate poison. You need to, it's something which is relaxing. The klal is, anything which is relaxing that sucks you in is bad news to relax with. Anything that's relaxing and allows you to return back to life is good. Yes?
How do you deal with Shmir Sinaim in the world of not so Shmir Sinaim?
So, the first thing is a person learns. The Gemara says, Ikadak Achina, Lekadak Achina. In other words, the Gemara makes a distinction between things that you have to and things that you don't have to. It's one of the problems when you sit in the Beis Medrash. So, Baruch Hashem, Beis Medrash is a place that's clear and clean and so on. When you walk out and there are things that you are involved in, it doesn't mean that now everything's okay. Whatever a person has, the person sitting in office, there are men and women there, whatever he has to be exposed to, because that's the normal part of life, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is helpful. Things that I look for myself, so now if I go to movies, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't ask me to go to movies, and there's no guarantees on that. Person learns to pull back what he can person learns there's a big difference between seeing a woman and staring at a woman, between, you know, all of these things are things that a person, so it's more subtle, it's not as 100% perfect, but it still is a very, very extraordinary undertaking of Kedusha.
Kedusha. Yeah. Maybe, Alan, what could be certain gedarim in the workplace? She was just mentioned about women, with women. How do we make sure that we keep our...
So, a lot of... First thing is choosing the workplace and the atmosphere in it. There are different workplaces. They have different atmospheres. There's a lot of times in Israel that this place is considered to be an extremely glamorous workplace. This other place is not. But the culture of one place versus the culture of the other place is two different worlds. That's an Israel. Learning to identify where is the culture very hefker. And the second thing is creating the sense of distance with other people. A person's attitude towards women should be polite, correct, menschlich. That's it. It's not engaging. The type of conversation you would have with a friend doesn't belong there. It's the person's personal life, sharing feelings, and this is a problem even with from well-intended people who were not out for anything and they're dressed well and everything. A woman tends to be warm, tends to be conversational, tends to be engaging. That's how Kach Baruch made the nature of a woman. Your job is to put up the shmira, that to say to yourself, this I need to be courteous, menschlich, polite, everything. I need to not engage in any type of emotional violence.
So I have someone who told me, okay, but I gotta be normal. I gotta be natural. How can I be natural if I can't have regular conversation?
You know, it's natural to eat chazer also. It's natural to do everything. It's part of it. It's natural not to wear yarmulke. Part of being a yid is, just like, let me give you an example. And we'll take it. There are people who station in life, you don't consider it to be natural to be involved with them. And you know, you have no problem with not being involved because it's just not your cup of tea. So this is the same thing. It's not. So this person will look at you as being snobbish, aloof. So be it. That's a level of nisoyin that a person has to be able to stand.
Maybe we add, or is it too extreme to say that not to call someone by the first name, a girl by the first name?
So that's a problem. If in the workplace everyone calls this woman Maria,
you call her Mrs.
You call her Mrs. O'Connor, it's strange. But the word, let's understand something. Certain things are symbols. In other words, when I call somebody by a first name, then it means something in a society. In if I walk over in Eretz Yisrael to a chash of a rav and I call him Yankel, it means that I know him from the day we were one day old and I didn't realize someone else is listening. There's no way in which I would call a chash of a person Yankel unless it's that circumstance. In America, any professional person that deals with me calls me Aaron. That's the norm. The doctor's Aaron. Aaron, how are you, Aaron, today? So using the word means nothing. In a from society, calling a woman by first name means she's your daughter or your wife. In the office, that's her name. And now we're getting to what the pronouns are. But now, at least, we're dealing with the first name. So it means nothing. An emotional engagement, telling a woman, asking her how do you feel about something, and having emotional engagement is an engagement on any level. It stirs some part of you to connect to the other person. So there's a big difference between things that are symbolic. Sending a flower to a woman. It means we're about to get engaged. It means that the secretary on her birthday always gets flowers. It means nothing other than a standard that the computer spits it out. In other words, symbols are very much dependent on what the society around has. There are things that transcend that, and it's like in a lot of times, yeah, this is be'etzem ma'isikinyan, this is ba'askama. A type of conversation I have with somebody that's beyond polite stuff is a relationship, and that's something a person needs to stay away from. Yes.
It's a question challenging question, basically about smartphones. You know, I'm older. I didn't grow up with a smartphone. So I have a phone now that I weighs WhatsApp and all these super kosher smartphones. Most of the guys here, 12 years old, they've had a phone, maybe younger. And, you know, it's like it becomes an extension of your brain. It becomes a constant companion. I tell guys, you know, before you reach your phone, say Modani. Mm-hmm. You don't reach it, it's right there. You don't reach it, reach your phone.
It also has Modani on it. and in the better phones, it says Modani for you. You put it on there.
So the question is there a real, a realistic goal for a guy, a Ben Torah, to have, he's had a smartphone since he's 12, it's part of his life, a realistic goal, and how to get there. Because when we are now, you live with it all the time, you know, they have these screen time, some guys say, I don't have enough time to learn, I don't have time for everything I want to do. So you daven Hashem, ask for 5 hours a day, extra time. So what that means is, if your phone breaks, you get 5 hours extra a day, and then you have money. What would a realistic goal be that a guy should have, and some hadracha, how to get there?
So, you know, it is the challenge of our times, and it's going to take the video game. I think the most important message to yourself is taking control of your life. Ask yourself, understand, you are not in control of your life when something else is controlling you. It's just like the way, let's give an example. Let's take something very different, eating. If a person has a problem with sugar, with fat, with high blood pressure, low blood, whatever it is, the doctor tells him, you've got to stop eating this or that or the other thing. Okay, so that's a medical issue. But let's say a person's got some disorder and he can't look at something on the table without grabbing and eating it. So the person needs to know himself, not that it's not healthy to eat these crackers and this yogurt. The person has to say to himself, get a life. What does it mean every time there's something on the table, you run for it? You're chained. You're addicted. And the idea of being a free person is something that's caught us. Understand ourselves, I cannot do things because I'm always reaching to see who's texted me. Why does somebody have the right to keep me on a leash? And if you make a breakthrough, even for an hour or 2 hours, when no matter what, to get to a point when it's the other way around, you devote 2 hours a day, 3 hours a day to answering this, answering that. And if people get upset, so be it. But understand that you're converting from an avid to somebody who is a free person. I mean, going back 3 generations, or 2.5 generations ago, my brother, Reb Nachman Vovitz, was once sitting in Beis Talmud, he learned Reb Chaim Yisachar. And Reb Chaim Yisachar, Beis Talmud, the old mir, is Reb Yochum's Talmidim, who came to America after a war, they established yeshiva that was considered the mir incarnate. That was the mir. In Bensonhurst, small yeshiva. So my brother was sitting with the mashkir, Reb Chaim Yisachar, and the phone rang. And Reb Chaim was oblivious. So he thought Reb Chaim doesn't hear so well, he's, you know, whatever. So he says, Reb Chaim, the phone's ringing. Reb Chaim says, who's the balabas, me or him? Like, the phone is telling me I have to run, pick up the phone. I'm talking to you, I'm not available. So the fact that the phone is ringing, why is that make me jump and run for it? If a person works on that nekuda, then he becomes, and then he signs. What do I need to do over there? When do I need to be available? How much? And it's on my terms, not on the phone's terms. It's an idea that I think if you hammer home on it, and you start by creating islands, that you will do this only from then to then. You will not touch the phone during Seder, and it'll be off any pack. And if somebody says, you know, I tried on one, you say, oh, I happen to be working there. I'm not available then. And so on. you know, if a person keeps stoking his sense of independence, his sense of being a gapa, his sense of being a person, we have some positive force that's driving us.
So yeah. Put me one last question, and, I know that for out of admiration, the group works on their language. There's even something called a curse jar. That if somebody would curse, God forbid, you put money into it, and there's an incentive. Could you comment on the value of proper language? And also, there are words that are not necessarily curses, but are street language, language borrowed from a black culture, and language that refers to the black culture. Are these worthy to stay away from? Or is it, that's not necessarily we'd have to work on? And what is it about language that maybe affects us?
So let's talk a minute about language and imagine a person has a drill. A drill is a motor, and it's and it just goes it rotates very quickly, strongly. That's what a drill is. What the drill will accomplish has a lot to do with the bit rather than the motor. If the bit is a certain type of bit, it will not be able to affect concrete. The other one will splinter wood. A third one will only make big holes that are useless for putting screws into it, and so on. The bit is really the specific job that we accomplish with it. The mind is the raw brain power. But what it applies itself to, how it applies itself, is the language. And if your language is coarse, then you're living a coarse life. If the only reply that you can give somebody is a coarse reply, then that's your interaction. You mean well, and what?
What does that mean? What does mean?
Well, I don't have a curse jar, but if I could borrow some of your curses, I will tell you exactly what it means. You know, it's using those words come from a desire to display a certain roughness, a certain unrefinement. It's sort of in your face kind of thing. It's sort of, you know, that's what it's an expression of. And that's the quality of your life. Even though inside you might be good and wonderful and so on. So language is really the expression of self, and the type a person who has poor vocabulary, a normal, you know, just a few words, his mind might be very keen, but he has a real problem bringing things to light because he can't express it. The reason why Lashon Kodesh is the language that Hashem created the world in is because it expresses Kedusha best. And the Rambam, Moreh Nevuchim, says that Lashon Kodesh has no innate coarse words. Certain words have been borrowed to mean things that are coarser, but it innately doesn't have it. It's a language that fits Kedusha perfectly. That's the way we need to look at language. We become the person we are by the language we use. We might mean well, we might think well, but if we can't express it in a way that's fine, then of course.
What defines something that is fine and then you find that can just be challenging out there?
Well, you can say language people on the street use tends to be coarse. Language you use in a base medrash, pre-base medrash, you can intuitively feel the difference. What type of things do you talk about? What terms, where do you borrow the terms from? You know, there's obviously between the bathroom and the bedroom. That's where most of the terms come from. Why? There's a reason for that. Because it sort of is kind of the most shocking, revolting, in your face language. That's where these terms come from. Being able to use terms that don't come from there, that come from a finer sense of things, makes you a finer person, a refined person.
What determines those things as being finer?
I'm sorry?
What determines those kind of words being finer than what other people might call not?
Well, there's a reason why people who don't work on themselves, have no ruchnistic sense of themselves, instinctively grab for a certain genre of words. In all languages, there's a common denominator that all these words are, like I told you, from the bathroom and the bedroom, and maybe some violent words as well. And those are people that arguably are not very ruchnistic people, and people that you would look up to as ruchnistic people, they have a very strong filter and the type of words they would use. One would say, you know what, there's a reason why in a formal, in a very formal, dignified setting, certain words wouldn't be used. Why? There's a reason for that, because people still feel it's not appropriate. So this president or senator might curse like a truck driver when he's off the camera, or when he thinks he's off the camera, but on the camera, in the rotunda, and in the official inauguration, he'll never use those words. Why? Because we do divide formal, dignified, to informal, not dignified, and coarse. We have an intuitive feel for it. Yes?
The last question, because then we're going to take a break and have Shir for a half hour before the question and answer session.
Yeah. I'm sorry?
It's a kind of a topic today, right? And in the simple format of opening the first talk, the Baha'i emphasized the importance of learning theology and philosophy, like based understanding of Altruism.
I'm sorry, I'm not following through your question.
Louder.
What?
Stand up.
In the what? In Pekei Davot?
In
Chovot Alvavot, yeah.
Rabbi Yochai emphasized the importance of studying theology and philosophy. Just understanding the basic understanding of Judaism. And he said he brings Chukim and Torah to show that it's a chiyuv and everyone to study this. So like, why is this in yeshivot nowadays such a like hidden topic that people barely talk about it, only like on social media?
So the Gra writes about, the question is, we do need to understand the basis for Yiddishkeit. The question is, what language, what structure is appropriate? The Chovos Halavos, and in this first shiur, goes about it, using the old type of philosophy and create the structure of it. It's something which today speaks to nobody. The Goyen says that the Kuzari would be an appropriate sefer instead. It is a little bit understated in yeshivas today, and it could be. People should be learning things. I would think Derech Hashem Ramchal is probably the sefer that will give you the best structure for understanding it in the language that today we feel expressed it to us. So yes, there should be more. Like everything, in big structures, you tend to get some sort of distortion, but it's definitely important that people should be learning it, yes?
I want to be brief, because I know we have to finish.
Sure.
Just to crystallize what we were talking about before, I'm sorry, one of the guys that asked this question is not even here right now, but maybe it'll get back to him. He asked, okay, fine, I know this is the right thing to control my language, but I don't want to shed my personality, so how do I get there? I know that's the right thing. Kurzweil's a nice way, but...
So look, in other words, personality is something that when we become used to something, we become attached to it, even though down deep it's not who we want to remain. Let's give an example. When a little kid graduates elementary school and goes to high school, he's happy he's going to high school, but he's a little bit sad he's in elementary school. It's hard to depart. Kid becomes a mitzvah, he still would like to be a little kid somehow, and he likes to be a big kid. Down deep, if we're sitting here in Yeshana Bet and Yeshana Gimel, you would like to be something refined, better. You look at people who are serious Talmid Chacham, and this is much more you want to be like. You're still attached. It's like somebody has an old shirt that he's fond of, but he knows it's not going to stay forever. Learning and understanding that as you move into a new mold, you'll become more and more comfortable with it. At some point, you're going to be embarrassed with the old mold. You're going to actually say to yourself, you know, well, I can't imagine I was ever like that. But it's, so, you know, keeping understanding that you want to be a different person, and it's hard because we tend to be attached to things that have grown with us. But if we understand that when we get into this new mold, I once heard from somebody, a very good muscle, many years ago, someone said, I hate apples. And it's really, thank God I hate apples. Because if I'd like apples, I would eat them all the time. And I really hate them. So I'm so happy I don't like apples. And it's a lot of times that type of logic is what sort of guides us. We know what we were. We know what we like to be. We're scared of becoming what we like to be because we're still attached to what we were and what we are to some degree. But when you become what you will become, then what you was will become a memory. And you know, Be'ez Hashem, you'll be very happy with the person you became. Okay.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. That is a great, great. The Shira will get together in their places in the evening. 15 minutes for a half hour, 10 minutes for a dance session.